I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're recording on today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I extend my respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander listeners that we have joining us. Sovereignty has never been ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
After Love in the Spectrum, and after I was offered an acting role by a director, my view set began to change for a long time afterwards.
Michael Theo instantly captured the hearts and minds of audiences across the globe on Netflix's Love on the Spectrum with his impeccable style, unintentionally hilarious one-liners, and his warm, loving personality. Whilst Michael is well known for his ABC and Netflix series, he is so much more than his TV persona. In fact, he is now the host of his own podcast, Mr. A+, is pursuing a career in acting, and regularly presents inspiring keynote speeches around the country. A passionate animal activist, nature lover, and railway enthusiast, Michael is a strong believer that it's our differences that make us special. He uses his online platforms to create a safe space to express and celebrate these differences. Michael is still on the search for love. He'd actually really like to meet a British lady if we have any listening. And today we discuss society's expectations, career, the importance of healthy relationships, travel, dreams, and how to live a fulfilling life. This is also the second time I've been able to sit down and chat with Michael. I was lucky enough to be a guest on his podcast, Mr. A+, which you can find linked in the show notes. Let's get into the chat. This is Life Chats, deep and meaningful conversations with friends and strangers. Michael, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm very excited to talk to you because I recently came on your show.
You did.
And I think we had such a good conversation. We had a lot in common. We share a lot of the same views when it comes to creativity and career and that sort of thing. So I'm excited to talk to you more about it today.
Yeah, of course.
For the people that are listening that might not have watched the show, which is kind of where you're most well known from, even though you've got lots of other things going on,
Can
you please give our listeners maybe a little summary of who you are and where you grew up?
Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Theo. You might remember me from Love on the Spectrum, which was at first on ABC and now it's on Netflix. I was on both seasons, actually.
And you were the star.
So everybody keeps saying.
And where did you grow up? Where did you spend the first part of your life?
Well, my entire life I've lived in Wollongong with mum and dad.
What do you think of Wollongong?
It's a wonderful place, but it's mostly a quiet area for elderly people, tourists and families with young kids. It's not really for famous public figures and it's not really the place to find love, even though my dad keeps disagreeing with me.
I can understand how you feel because I also grew up in a smaller town out of the city on the Central Coast. So basically the same thing. It's about 2 hours north and you're 2 hours south. And yes, it can be difficult to kind of go back there because sometimes I feel like all my friends are here and my career is here and it seems like a bit of a slower pace to life.
Yeah, of course.
Mm.
But I actually really love it here in Bondi, but if only I had the money to afford a place here.
It is very expensive. I think, you have to live in a share house, or which is quite challenging because unless they're your friends, it can be pretty difficult to live with strangers, I've found. I've done it a few times and it's not for me. Or, if you're lucky enough to be in a relationship and you can afford to put down a deposit for a place, it can be quite hard to figure all that sort of stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what your life was like. We're talking maybe like 5 years ago. What life was like before Love on the Spectrum? What were you doing in Wollongong?
Well, before Love on the Spectrum, I was actually working full-time in a kitchen manufacturer in a suburb of Shell Harbour called Oak Flats. I don't really want to name the
That's
company
okay.
for privacy reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But before Love on the Spectrum, I was happy there as a job. But at the time, I also had an aimless future. I didn't really have much else going for me.
I actually heard you say, or I read that before Love on the Spectrum, you said, before I was on television, I saw myself as a nobody from nowhere.
Yeah, I did.
Is that how you felt?
Yeah. Mm.
And what did you see for your future if you were to stay in Wollongong?
Honestly, I don't think much would change if I didn't appear on the show. I'd still be in the same position I was 5 years ago.
And did you enjoy that job, or it was kind of just...
I enjoyed the job before Love on the Spectrum, but for a long time after the show, I realised one day that my heart was no longer in the job.
Mm.
And I began to dislike a lot of things about it. Not so much my colleagues, just the work itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw the work itself as soulless.
Because you're a very creative person, so I can't imagine there was a lot of creativity in that role.
There was no creativity. I was basically just being a factory worker.
Mm.
But like I say, a factory is no place for a creative mind.
No, it's not. Nor is an office, really. That's kind of how I feel about office environments. Like, they're very clinical. You've got harsh lighting, air conditioner. Everyone sits in their cubicles. You don't really have any room to kind of be yourself.
Yeah.
Can be challenging.
And what's also difficult is not being allowed to be left alone and do your work in peace.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So what were you like? I'm interested to hear, because I know a few of your hobbies. I know you love trains. But what were railways? What were some of your hobbies growing up? And did you ever see yourself being able to make a career out of them?
Honestly, I never really thought I did. In high school, my strongest subject was woodwork, and I then decided I wanted to get a job in something with timber.
Mm.
But that wasn't quite the case. I ended up getting a job in a kitchen manufacturer instead, two of them actually. Straight after I finished school, I was enrolled in a program called Transition to Work. That no longer operates. That mm-hmm. program helped school leavers look for employment, build on their resume skills, well, interview skills, telephone mm-hmm. skills, and help write a resume
mm-hmm.
and a cover letter. And I managed to get a job in the end out of that. My first full-time job was at a different kitchen manufacturer in Wollongong, a suburb called Ferry Meadow, but I lasted there for only 26 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's because in the last year I was there, 2016, I really hated that job because I was on the edge banner every single day, and whenever doors fell off the conveyor belt, I was blamed.
Oh, no.
And one of my colleagues kept giving me a hard time, calling me names like pussy and all that. And at one time, he even called me a waste of oxygen.
That's horrible.
Something I found particularly insulting.
Well, I'm very sorry you had to go through that.
Yeah.
So you worked these jobs, you weren't really loving them. If I was to sit here with Michael maybe 10 years ago and say, Michael, what's your dream job? What do you think he would have said?
Acting.
Really?
Because that's all I've ever wanted to do since childhood.
What do you love about acting?
Well, it's not the fame that I'm attracted to. It's just doing the craft itself.
Mm-hmm.
Being funny, making people laugh, because that's how I see myself. I've said to myself quite a few times this year that Michael Thayer is not supposed to be some normal, ordinary human being. He's supposed to be this eccentric, flamboyant comedian who makes people laugh no matter what he says or does.
Well, I think you're succeeding at that so far, so you're doing pretty well.
But I don't even try to be funny.
That was like your best man speech that you recently did at your brother's wedding, was it?
That was like late last year.
Oh, okay. So you did that and that went like viral.
Yeah, I noticed.
And I think that's because you have very good comedic timing. You might not realise, but you're very good at that.
I don't realise it.
So you wanted to be an actor, you still wanted to be an actor, and you are an actor.
Well, I'm not really in the same league as some of the big names like Kevin Hart or Tom Hanks, that's mm-hmm. for certain. Well, not any time yet.
Exactly. That's a very important word, yet. I think the way that we say things is really powerful, and to say I'm not like them can be really disempowering, but to say I'm not like them yet, or I'm not where I want to be yet, you remind yourself that you can get there.
Yeah, of course.
So what sort of actors do you look up to?
Several comedic ones. Ones like Jim Carrey, Kevin Hart, those actors from shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Recreation, The Office, Modern Family, a lot of my favourite shows.
Yep.
But then there's also Phil Hartman, RIP. And then quite a few voice actors from the golden age of American animation.
Right.
The ones I'm referring to are Mel Blanc, Dawes Butler, Don Messick, who have all passed away, and many of the other voice actors who worked for Hanna-Barbera. If anyone is not familiar with Hanna-Barbera, I'll explain who they are. Are you familiar?
I'm not.
I'll explain. Back in those days, Hanna-Barbera was an animation studio that did shows like The Flintstones, The Jetsons, Wacky Races, The Yogi Bear Show, and The Great Grape Ape Show, and other characters like Quickdraw McGraw, Snagglepuss, Huckleberry Hound, Secret Squirrel, and even the Powerpuff Girls was one of their last works.
Wow. So all the big shows.
I'll explain why I love those shows. It's why I'm a huge fan of Hanna-Barbera's work. It's because the 1960s was a time when television was pure, unlike a lot of today's content. And also because Hanna-Barbera's work revolved around families, friendships, and close partnerships. Something I find touching and very appreciative of.
Let's talk a little bit about that. So, because I think it would be a good segue into Love on the Spectrum. So did you ever date anyone growing up?
No, I didn't.
Did you want to?
I did, but I just didn't know how to go about it. But also in high school, I was marginalized and invisible to a lot of my peers from my year.
I'm sorry to hear that. Can you talk a bit about that if you feel comfortable?
Sure. I didn't really know how to interact with those people at the same time as well. But a lot of people from outside my year at least made an effort to try and include me in their groups. So I never really had a set group of people. I just floated from one group to the next. But I was also very popular among a lot of students there and among the staff.
I can imagine. I think you would be quite an awesome student to have. So you experienced that in high school, and then out of high school, did you kind of look to dating on any apps or in any way?
Well, when I was a school leaver, I didn't think about doing dating apps. But then I started to look into, as I got into my early 20s, I ended up joining eHarmony for a whole year in 2018. But that didn't help.
Yeah, you were saying before that you only had one date, I think.
That was when I was offered a free membership by eHarmony on Instagram.
Cool.
2 years ago.
And what do you think is it that's so challenging about dating? Because I think particularly our generation finds it hard now that social media is so prevalent and we're not encouraged into spaces that we would have maybe been a few generations ago. Like, my parents met at a dance. Like, that just doesn't happen anymore. So what do you think are the main reasons why people find dating challenging?
For what I know is that people don't, in our generation, don't value quality time that much because they just rather be buried in their phones, going on social media and whatnot. But sometimes I dread going on platforms like Instagram because from all the posts I see, it makes my life look like it's not worth living.
As in, it's unrealistic what you see on Instagram, or what do you mean by that?
What I mean is that I'm not too sure what people get up to outside of what they post on Instagram.
Yeah.
But at the moment, my life is not that exciting. A lot of people believe that because I was on Love on the Spectrum, my life is a bed of roses, but honestly, at the moment, it's not.
And I imagine there are parts of your life that are still the same. Like, there's lots that doesn't change, even though you go on a TV show.
Yeah, I'm still living with mum and dad, which is embarrassing me.
I don't think it's something to be embarrassed about, but I can understand why you feel that way because I'm living with my parents at the moment too, and that has been a big kind of thing I've had to surrender to. So I know how you're feeling because you want to feel like you support yourself and you can do, you can have your own independence.
Yes.
But also life is long and we have lots of time. Yeah. So it's okay to be there for now.
Yeah, I suppose. But the thing is, I realized this recently. As much as I love and respect my parents very much to the ends of the earth, the older I get and the longer I live with them, the less I've come to tolerate what I'm forced to put up with. Everything they do, they would do, I would do it the opposite way. Well, certain things.
Like what?
Like using a Roomba instead of an irritating vacuum cleaner.
Right.
And I would also have a detachable shower head.
Oh, yes. Those things are easily fixed if you move out on your own.
Yes.
For sure.
And not to mention having a pet.
You would like a pet?
Yep, I've never had one.
What would you like?
Probably a cat.
Cats are great because they're less maintenance than a dog. They don't need walking. They're happy to kind of sit on their own. I actually never used to like cats. I used to be a strictly dog person. And then I moved in with my best friend who had a cat and I ended up loving it. He was the best company. He was quiet. He would just kind of sit next to me as I would do my work in lockdown because I was working from home. And yeah, I think they're great little companions as long as they're not nasty. Sometimes you can get some mean ones.
But also with pets, it depends on how you treat them as well. Mm. If you treat them horribly, they'll just behave horribly.
True. If they feel loved, they'll probably be kind.
Yeah, because that's all pets want. They just want to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
But some people out there are not capable of giving love.
Is that something you have found in dating as well?
Well, a lot of the girls I've dated, I've realized that they're not really right for me.
So what are you looking for in a partner?
There's quite a few things, actually. She must come from a loving family with old school values, is a beautiful, loving woman with a pure heart, most important. And thirdly, she would have to be able to handle being in a relationship with a famous person.
Perfect.
Because some women are not capable of handling it.
Yes, and are there any other values for you? Because they're three, but they're pretty, I feel like they're pretty core values. Is there anything else that if you could write down on a list all the things that you'd want, anything else that comes to mind?
Well, when it comes to drinking, if she's a social drinker, that's perfectly fine. But if she's an alcoholic, that's a deal breaker.
Like a party person.
Yeah.
Mm.
And because partying is not my idea of a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking, that's also a deal breaker. Drugs, same.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling, yes. Another deal breaker, because I'm very smart with my money.
Yes.
And because money is for saving and spending, not for gambling it away.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, one of my best friends told me to quit while I'm ahead because I actually made two bets once a few years ago and I ended up winning both.
It's, beginner's luck, isn't it? Because that's what happened when I turned 18. It was kind of like a, yay, now I can place a bet if I want to. So I went. And I placed a bet and I won $500. And I thought, oh, this could be exciting and fun. But then I thought, no, I don't need to do that anymore. I've had my fun. I've had my luck and I've won, but I won't push it.
But with who she is as a person, that's what I care about the most. Because I don't really want anyone who's sour or snarky.
Mm.
Because trying to make them happy, that's basically a full day of hard work without breaks plus overtime and there's no received payment.
Yes, I think that's important to me too because I am a naturally, I think, quite a positive person and I find I get really, really dragged down when people are negative and whinge. Like, obviously you have to acknowledge when you're having a hard time. I'm not saying you can never feel down or upset. I feel like that all the time at times, but you have to be able to, I think, frame it positively. And I would struggle being with a partner that was like quite negative all the time.
Yeah. But also when it comes to things like whinging is not really the right word.
What would you use?
I would use like ranting.
Mm, okay. Yeah, well, someone who did that, who ranted all the time, I would struggle with.
Well, you can't rant all the time.
Mm.
But in fact, whenever I realize that I did wrong, I have no trouble apologizing to people.
That's a good skill.
Because for me, it's easy.
Mm. A lot of people find it really hard.
But why?
I think because they have to admit a form of weakness or that they were wrong or that they made a mistake. And we're conditioned in our society to think that you have to be strong, independent, whereas I find strength to be vulnerability. And I think a lot of people also feel the same way.
Why can't people just acknowledge the fact that as humans, we all have weaknesses? And because humans are not the definition of purity,
mm-hmm.
they're the furthest thing from, but animals are.
Mm.
Because what I've noticed about pets is they provide you, shower you with unconditional love, but humans don't.
Humans don't.
They only give you the time of day only when it's convenient for them, which is pretty selfish if you ask me. But I don't associate with people who are like that because I've been given this advice by two pieces of advice by a couple of people.
Mm-hmm.
Gus Wallen said.
He's a legend.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely is. He was a previous guest on my podcast
from
last year.
I went to university with his son. We're in the same class.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Jack.
He said to me, decide who's in your village. Mm. If someone's not part of your village, don't associate with them. And my brother even once said to me years ago, don't waste your time on people who are not worth your time.
I love that, those bits of advice. It's really important. There's, you know, that famous quote, you become like the five people you most spend time with. So if you think about the five people in your life, like your family and maybe a couple of friends, you often do become, you hold yourself to the same standard. So if you want to be better, you have to surround yourself with better people.
Of course.
Mm.
In fact, a lot of people that were from my year in high school, a lot of them have now become parents.
Mm. Do you want to talk about that? Because we talked a little bit about it on your show. Would you like to have a family and get married and have a house?
Yes.
And
I would love to have all of those things.
Tell me about your kind of view on the way that all plays out.
Well, I don't really know how it's going to pan out, but it's something that I can't plan either because there's a lot of things that you should plan in life, but families and partners aren't on that list.
Mm-hmm. We spoke a little bit about on your show how some people who we're both very, very lucky that we're working in jobs that we love or we're chasing, you know, careers that we love and that makes, you know, us happy and brings us fulfillment.
Yes,
a lot of people don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, I know.
So what would you say if someone's listening and they're kind of working a job that they hate to support their family or, you know, they have to pay a mortgage but they hate their 9 to 5? Like what would you kind of say to that?
That's a bit of a tough one. But all I can say to them is cut yourself some slack and give yourself a break because you can't spend your entire life doing only what's best for others. Why can't you take a little bit of time to do what's best for yourself? Because if you don't do what's best for yourself, you'll just end up having an existential crisis.
And a lot of people do. That's why they call it the midlife crisis, because they think it creeps up on people and then they realize I'm not happy, I'm not doing what I want to be doing, but they don't really know how to get out of that.
Mm. But also another weakness that a lot of people don't acknowledge is a lot of people believe that they're entitled to anything they want.
Mm.
But you have, unfortunately, in today's world, you have to work for things.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, life does not always accommodate what you want and things don't come to you on a silver platter. You have to work hard for them, like I did and like my dad did as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're born into a wealthy family, maybe that would be a bit different. But being part of a wealthy family, that's not always a bed of roses either because the matriarch and the patriarch become so focused and obsessed on making money and keeping it to themselves that they refuse to spend it on things. But spending is a part of life. But when it comes to spending, I wouldn't spend it on numerous houses or numerous cars or any of that. When it comes to a house, what I would prefer to have is a simple cottage.
Lovely.
Yeah.
In England, you were saying?
Well, England or the Caribbean or if I find somebody in this country.
Mm-hmm. What would you love about living in England and the Caribbean, do you think?
In the Caribbean, it's warm all year round.
Mm.
And there are a lot of islands and they seem to be very beautiful. And I would at least have maximum privacy.
Yes, because you'll be so famous, you'll want to have somewhere you can hide away.
Yep.
Mm. And England?
But England, I really love the culture. Mm-hmm. And I actually love the British accents.
Mm-hmm.
And hence why I have an attraction to British women.
If there's any British women watching this, how can they contact you? Your DMs?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Through Instagram.
I'll tell them if you're listening. Now, let's change pace a little bit. I really want to talk about Love on the Spectrum.
Sure.
So how were you approached to go on that show?
You're not the first person who's asked me this question. But yeah, I'm happy to elaborate.
Yes.
You see, before Love on the Spectrum, I was with a disability employment service called At Work Australia. They used to be called Essential Personnel, but now they're At Work. Just one word.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Pictures, who was behind Love on the Spectrum, they contacted various employment agencies,
mm-hmm.
and including At Work, and they recommended me for the show because I told my case manager at the time a few years ago that I just wanted to get out there, make new friends, meet new people and all that. And when I first heard of Love on the show mm-hmm. itself, I saw it as a golden opportunity to help me find a partner. I didn't think about things about fame, that didn't even cross my mind.
I'm sure that you wouldn't have even imagined that you could have had a public platform after the show or your own podcast or acting opportunities.
I didn't.
Mm.
Love on the Spectrum made all of that possible.
So what was the actual show like? If you reflect on the filming and the process, what do you kind of, how do you feel about it now?
On the process, I had a blast mm-hmm. doing it, meeting new people and all that. But on the first season, when I had that one date with Amanda,
mm-hmm.
it ended before it even started.
Why do you think that was?
The atmosphere was too much for her.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, she was also really underdressed in comparison to how I was.
I loved your top hat. I think, did you wear a top hat to that date? No.
I didn't. I didn't even have one at the
time. Oh, I don't know why I thought you did. A suit?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
But I sensed that things weren't going right. So I asked the director if she was all right. And I automatically blamed myself because I have this belief that if a woman is having a date with someone and she's not enjoying herself, it's usually the man's fault.
I would disagree with you there because I would say sometimes people go on dates and they're maybe not ready or they're distracted or they've got stuff going on in their life or they're stressed.
Yeah, that's...
And that can all play into it.
Yeah, that... Those are a lot of fair points.
Mm.
Communication is important.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad thing to tell people if you're going through crap at the moment because the other person has to be understanding.
Exactly. And I think it's important, even if it's not a romantic date, even if you go out to lunch with your friends or your family, that you try and put your phone down. I often turn my phone over so that I don't get distracted or, you know, it's important to give people your time and your presence and your awareness.
Of course, because quality time is something that we have to cherish mm-hmm. with people because it's not about convenience or ease. It's mm-hmm. about enjoying what's important in life.
Totally.
Because phones are just a piece of technology to help us communicate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to take over our lives.
Have you watched the movie Don't Worry, Darling with Florence Pugh?
I haven't.
It's a bit of a thriller, but it's really great. I won't spoil anything, but yeah, it's basically this dystopian film. It's on Netflix now about how we live in these simulated worlds. They're not real.
Yeah.
Mm.
But why do people keep having that belief?
I think because technology is so powerful and I think we might be a bit scared about what it's capable of. And if you say, for example, you were the type of person that you weren't really happy with your life, you would probably find it quite like a relief to spend a lot of time on social media where you're living in a world that's not where you are right now.
I suppose that's true.
Mm. If you could go back to Love on the Spectrum and the filming, is there anything that you would do differently?
Honestly, I don't think I could have done anything different.
Mm. You were yourself.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just being myself the whole time.
What was it like when the show went to air? Talk me through that experience.
For the first time that my family and I watched it, it kind of felt a little bit weird
Did
seeing
it?
Myself on screen.
Mm-hmm. And what was the feedback like? I suppose, were you getting people following you on Instagram, messaging you?
I didn't join Instagram until like September 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do it by choice. I did it for my fan base.
Mm-hmm. Do you like being on there now though?
I do enjoy it, but sometimes I don't feel too keen logging on sometimes.
Why is that?
Because when I look at my life and the posts that people place on Instagram, they all look like they're enjoying themselves, but I can't say the same about me.
It's interesting, isn't it, though, because they obviously have stuff going on in their lives too. They're not posting about it.
But why do they post only the good stuff and never the bad?
I think it's because it makes, yeah, it's a false reality. It makes your life look really attainable and really exciting. And there's almost that pressure on Instagram that that's what it is. So to fit in, you have to do the same thing. That's why I love apps like Be Real were so fun, and Threads, which is new, because I feel like there's less pressure to post anything curated. You can just post what you're feeling and what you're thinking. But I think every social media app has pressure around it. Maybe I'm just saying that because I work in social media, but I would very rarely post something off the bat without thinking about how it's going to be perceived.
I also actually wanted to say, back when I was in high school, I wasn't marginalized by all my peers, just some.
Yes.
Some people from my year actually made an effort themselves to try and befriend me.
Can we talk a little bit about autism?
Sure.
So what's your experience been like growing up? Were your parents like, did they explain to you that you had autism, or did that go?
My mother actually explained it to me. She didn't do it until I was 13, because when I was a kid, I probably wouldn't have understood it at the time. Because when I was in primary school, I kept to myself by choice. But as I got into my last couple of years of primary school, I started to make some friends, but only had a few. And I was constantly off in my own world.
Yeah.
And to this day, I kind of look back on it with a degree of embarrassment, because kids these days don't seem to be like that.
Different generation though. They don't have, like, we didn't have phones when we were in primary school, whereas kids now do. So their social skills are probably quite different.
Yeah, that's true. And because back in the 2000s, people didn't really know how to interact with people on the spectrum.
So what did your mom say to you?
She basically told me that I have Asperger's and what it is. It's a mild form of autism. And that one of their biggest challenges is their social skills.
And how do you remember feeling when she had that conversation with you?
I don't remember, because that was like at some point 16 years ago.
Yes, true. So you talked a little bit about your high school experience and whatnot. For anyone listening, what do you wish more people knew about autism?
That people can include them in social groups and give them a chance at dating.
Yes. So do you think knowing that you had autism changed how you went about life and how you did things?
It didn't really change things at all.
That's good.
Things just stay the same.
That's good. And with the social skills side of things, I think your social skills are awesome, but was there anything that your mum or your dad or anyone at school felt like you needed to do?
With my peers? Don't think so.
No.
Constantly minding their own business.
That's good.
But there was something I noticed about certain girls from my year in high school. Should I elaborate?
Sure.
Some people may disagree with me on this, but these are my thoughts and my perception. I noticed that when teenage girls have a boyfriend, she becomes obsessed with him to the point where it's the only thing she can think about and talk about. It's basically the honeymoon phase.
That's true.
But there's something that she's unaware of the whole time. It's only a matter of time before the relationship eventually fails, and then her happiness dies along with it. Goes down, then her mental state goes downward. For a little while, until finally she's back to her old self after she realizes that she has no choice but to accept that's reality and move on, because teenage boys have no maturity. They're not even fit to be in relationships.
Some adult men aren't either yet.
Yes, I know. But that's what I've also noticed. Women have this ability to mature more quickly, but men for them, it takes time, probably too much time.
I can agree with that.
But the other thing is, a lot of these young people put too much emphasis on partying and having a good time and all that. There's so many ways to have a good time. My idea of a good time mm-hmm. is spending time with a woman one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. I think like I'm much the same that I don't really enjoy partying. I'd rather go to a cafe with a friend or go for a walk or do a workout class together and have more quality time than big groups of people where you don't really get to really hear about how anyone truly is because you're trying to see everyone.
It's like you took the words right out of my mouth there, Georgia.
I'm glad. We'll finish this subject before we jump onto the next.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, I think, assume wrongly that people with autism, I mean, as we say, it's a spectrum, so some people might need more support than others.
Yeah.
But I can imagine, is it quite frustrating when people assume you might need help when you don't?
Yeah, that does frustrate me in a way. But I think people on the spectrum should be more independent, but in terms of needing help, it depends on the severity of the person's condition.
For example, I think something that will surprise a lot of people is that, like, you went to Europe on your own and
yep.
tell me a bit about that because that's awesome.
Well, one of my best friends named Brianna, she actually was living in Europe at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In late March 2017, we were FaceTiming one night. Then she asked me if I'd like to come to Europe and spend 2 weeks with her.
Amazing.
I was surprised, but then said to myself, oh, crap, what's my dad going to say?
Did you think your dad would be worried?
Yeah, because my dad's pretty protective of me.
Right. So what happened?
I actually ended up going.
Yeah.
To Germany.
Amazing. What did you think of Germany?
Loved it there.
Could you ever live there?
I don't think I could.
Mm.
It's probably too cold there. Plus, I have trouble understanding the language.
Yes.
A lot of the words are very difficult to pronounce.
They are. So how did the travel go? Were you nervous?
A little.
Mm-hmm.
But I managed to get through it all right.
Mm-hmm.
I was staying with Brianna, of course.
Mm-hmm.
She lived in a lovely apartment somewhere in Berlin.
Lovely. What an awesome experience. Now, do you feel like you can basically go anywhere that you, well, not everywhere, but you can go to a lot of places in the world now and you've done it?
Well, I've only been to Germany and Hawaii in terms of international travel, but it's not enough.
What's the top maybe five places on your list that you'd love to visit?
Great Britain, of course.
Yes.
Europe,
mm-hmm.
North America.
Any specific places within those continents?
Canada
mm-hmm.
and several parts of the US, maybe like Texas or Manhattan or California.
Incredible.
And then there's also probably Brazil.
Oh.
And some provinces in Africa.
I'd love to go to Africa.
I'd love to see their wildlife.
Mm. My ex-bosses, they were all South African and they were like, if you do anything in your life, you have to go on a safari. Like I had this one boss and he was just like, you have to go. It's one of the best things you'll ever do in your life.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Because the wildlife and the nature there, to me, that is the definition of purity.
And happiness.
Oh, yes.
Mm. I have a few more questions. This chat has gone so quickly, I think, because we have so much to talk about. But if you're happy to keep going, we might do a few more questions.
I got all day to do this.
Oh, we could do a whole podcast together, the two of us.
I would love that.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's talk about dating.
Yeah.
What's your advice to people to maintain a really strong, healthy relationship? You were talking before about how women can kind of get lost or young women get lost in the relationship and lose themselves a little bit and become obsessed. What would be your like top tips for maintaining a really healthy relationship?
For women or men or both?
Both.
Oh, well, communication is very important and never go to bed angry.
That's
course.
A good one.
And don't be too proud to apologize or try to make it up to each other. Do it in the best way you can do it.
Mm.
And for men, the last thing you should ever say to a woman is, we'll talk about it later. Or something like, you're fat.
Oh, that's a really bad one.
Oh, yeah. Because women absolutely hate that.
And just fat shaming in general to any gender is just not nice. We shouldn't be doing it.
Nah.
Should never put someone down on what they look like in any way.
And when I say We'll talk about it later. Do you know what a man really means when he says that? That's a man's way of saying, I don't want to talk about it ever again and expects it to never be brought up again.
And then what would he do if you bring it up again?
Well, what I would do is I would just sit down for 5 or 10 minutes, listen to what she has to say, and try and solve the problem if there's one.
Mm. I think a really good framing as well that I've heard a lot about is rather than thinking it's you versus me in an argument, it's us versus the problem. Yeah. So it's like as a relationship, you're a team. You're not meant to be against one another. If there's a problem or a fight, it's the two of you trying to sort out the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Because
I like that.
Because teamwork is important in a relationship.
Mm.
There's no I in we.
Mm, that's a good one. Would there be anything else that for people listening that are in relationships that you think are kind of the markers for success?
Ultimatums are not an answer to a problem.
Mm.
Because if somebody gives their partner an ultimatum, that person secretly expects their partner to choose what they want.
Mm.
But that's not fair on them.
Because the partner can't mind read what they want.
No.
That was a really big one for me because I've been going to therapy for a few years. She's mainly like a sex and relationship therapist, but I think that those themes really, they're part of your whole life. So I sometimes just go and talk about family or talk about work. Mm-hmm. I don't just go in and talk about relationships. But one thing that she said to me is, people aren't mind readers, especially partners. You have to communicate exactly what's on your mind and you have to say it. Otherwise, expecting someone to know and then feeling resentful that they don't know is just, it's not healthy.
And just because you become married doesn't either get married or get into a relationship doesn't mean that you don't have to put in any effort anymore. It's a lifelong work in progress. You never stop working on yourself or the relationship.
That's such good advice. I hope everyone listens to that and writes it down. You never stop working on yourself.
No.
It's true.
And because you need to go above and beyond to make your partner happy these days.
Yes, but both people do, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice from both people and a giving from both people.
And because if I was in a relationship, the last thing I would ever want is for my partner to be cold and distant, and then she would start having regrets and wish she could have done better because some women have those.
They do, for sure.
Some people think that they could have done better, but honestly, it could be a lot worse.
That's a good way to think about it. So where are you at with dating now? Are you looking for a lady or are you...
In Wollongong, I actually stopped giving up looking for someone in Wollongong some time ago.
Yes.
Because Wollongong is not really the place for famous people to find love. It's a quiet place for families with young kids, tourists and elderly people.
I think it might take maybe you travelling overseas to bump into someone that you really like their company.
Well, I actually began to realise recently that some people are destined to find their partners internationally.
That's true.
And most likely I'm one of those people.
I think I'm one of those people too. Because I just don't want to force anything that's not meant to happen. And it feels like I've been in Sydney for so many years that at this point I would be forcing something unless it just organically happened out of the blue, which I'm open to, but I don't really have any high hopes for that.
Yeah, same.
I think dating culture in Australia is different too. I was talking to a friend who lives in America and he was saying like, what happens if like you see someone attractive in a bar? Don't you just go up and say hi to them? Or in a cafe, don't you just start talking to people? I said, that doesn't really happen here. Like it should, but it doesn't, does it?
It seems like that Australia makes dating look like it's hard.
Mm, yeah.
But why is the dating life in Australia so difficult?
I don't know. I don't know, but I've been single for a very long time. And I think it's they're not willing to put themselves out there or potentially embarrass themselves by walking up to someone in a cafe and saying, hi, I think you look awesome. Can I have your number? People just don't do that because you'd rather go on social media where you can hide and DM people.
That seems like a very cowardly way of doing it.
It's what we all do, isn't it? It's what a lot of people do.
But internationally, it doesn't seem like that. It's that hard.
Like Europe, for example, particularly Italy, you know, is renowned for being the romantic capital of the world where men will just chase down women in the street if they think they're beautiful or, you know, do these really incredible grand gestures. It's just a very different culture to what we have here.
Amen. And that kind of culture, I consider it A+.
That is A+. Okay, great segue.
And another thing that I could suggest to people is when you're on a date with a woman, do romantic things like opening the door for her, pulling out a chair and asking questions about her, not talk about yourself. Save that for later. And when it comes to gift giving, don't give her gifts too often because if you do it, she'll expect it.
That's a good one.
And besides, gifts cost money. And money is also to be saved, not just for spending on a person.
Do you know about the 5 love languages, which is a framework for relationships?
Oh, yes. Physical affection, quality time, acts of service, words of affirmation, and
gifts.
Gifts. Gift giving, yeah.
So what do you think yours are?
Mine are all 5 of them.
Are they?
Well, for me, to a woman.
So what I find really interesting, which only really clicked for me recently, is that your love languages that you have for yourself are often how you will give love. But you have to keep in mind what the other person's love languages are because that's maybe not how they interpret love. For example, I love buying gifts. I would love to receive a gift because that to me would make me feel like someone is really, they know me really well and they're thoughtful and they understand what I like and they've remembered maybe little things that I've told them. But for example, if I was to buy a really thoughtful gift for someone that doesn't think the same way, they might not even see it as a big deal. They might just be like, thanks. Whereas it's such a big grand gesture for me.
Yeah, of course.
So I think that's something I'm going to be more mindful of in relationships is giving people love how they need to receive it, not how I enjoy to give it. So I think knowing your love languages is important.
But also giving your partner physical affection, that's actually supposed to be a positive thing.
Totally.
And if I was someone's partner, I would say to them that I love them every single day, not just here and there or rarely.
Mm-hmm.
I would do it daily.
That's important. I love that you have all 5.
And with gift giving, I prefer to give than receive.
Yes. That's a good trait. It means you're very empathetic.
Yeah.
I think mine are... Honestly, I love gifts, but I genuinely think mine are words of affirmation and quality. Oh, I don't know. What are the 5 again?
There's gift giving, acts of service, quality time, physical affection, and words of affirmation.
So they're my 2. Words of affirmation and physical affection because I'm a very independent person and I like my own time. So I don't really need the quality time. Like I'm happy for us to see like each other when we can and that doesn't matter to me too much whereas I know a lot of people really need a lot of time with their partner.
Yes.
I've been in long distance relationships before and that doesn't really bother me too much.
Well, I wouldn't expect my partner to devote all her time to me because she needs to have time with her relatives, her family and even her girlfriends.
Have a life outside the relationship.
Yeah, because every woman needs that because if it's just your relationship, you're going to feel trapped at some point.
But so many people do that, don't they? Like I have friends who I honestly don't hear from them for like a year because they've gotten into a new relationship and then when it ends, they want to be friends again. And I just think, no, you have to still prioritize your social life and your friends.
That sounds like they're only wanting to be friends with you for their convenience. But you should still be friends with that person, even if you're in a relationship, whether you're in a relationship or not.
Totally. You've got to make time for the people that matter to you.
Exactly. And because with men, sometimes a man needs guy time.
Exactly. I think both people in the relationship should have time outside the relationship.
And being jealous is the last thing you should be as well. Because after all, your partner's not your property. Because after all, we're just humans after all. There's 8 billion of us on this planet.
That's a lot.
Probably too many if you ask me.
Do you believe in soulmates?
Yes, I do.
So there's 8 billion people on the planet. Do you think, you know, I believe maybe there could be multiple people out there that are soulmates. I think there probably is. There's probably multiple people in this country, let alone the whole world, that you would be an amazing match with. What are your thoughts on that?
I would agree with you on that. Because I don't think I'd be able to find a soulmate here.
No.
But overseas, most likely, probably would, yeah.
Let's talk about, before we wrap up, you have an amazing podcast.
Thank you.
Tell us about it.
Well, my podcast is called Mr. A+. I talk about a variety of different things, no set topic. I also have a variety of different guests on, from all walks of life. They don't have to be famous people. They can be anyone that has an interesting story.
Like me, I'm not famous, but I came on your podcast and it was an incredible chat.
Yeah, it was. And one of the best podcasts I recorded too.
I'm so glad. That's awesome. I think we have a lot to talk about because we have a lot of similar interests.
And my podcast also has a strict no COVID talk policy.
Why is that?
I'll tell you why. 2 years ago, during the lockdown, when my podcast was being developed, I made a vow to never talk about it.
Okay.
I did it for the audience and for my fans.
Mm.
Because everyone's fed up with hearing about the virus, and I am too.
Yep.
But also, another important reason is, because of the pandemic, New South Wales and Victoria were put through hell by their premiers. And that's why I refuse to talk about anything that's political on the podcast.
Mm.
Because I'm against talking about politics on it too, because my podcast is a safe platform where opinions and choices are all welcome without fear of being discriminated in any way. And it's also a place where people can talk about whatever they want to say, as long as it's not about the virus or anything political. And because it's about having fun and having conversations. But as a podcast host, I like to also maintain a degree of professionalism by, you know, doing things like refraining from asking inappropriate questions, like about their sex life and all that, stuff that I don't need to know about.
No.
Because you need to have some degree of privacy in your life.
It's true. And I think the guests appreciate your professionalism and your openness too, because it really is, there's so many different topics and different guests that are discussed. Who, if you could pick, who's been your favourite guest?
I've had a long list of favourite guests.
Pick, maybe tell me three that have, you know, if people are listening, who should they go on, what episode should they go and listen to?
Top three, that's too hard.
Okay. What some episodes that you think people should listen to?
That's better.
Cool.
You were one of them.
Oh, thank you.
That's all right. And then there's also Kirsten Banks, Esme Louise James, Dr. Vanessa Pirotta.
What were the topics of those people? Sorry, like what did you talk about with each?
Oh, Kirsten Banks is an astrophysicist.
Wow.
Esme Louise James is an author and she's also a TikTok sensation.
Mm-hmm.
She's behind Kinky History.
Okay.
Dr. Vanessa Pirotta is a wildlife scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also Natalie Bassingthwaite and Justin Clark, two of my favourite singers. And then there's also actresses like Claudia Carvin.
She was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
When I hugged her, it was like getting a hug from my mother.
Aww.
And there's also Susie Porter.
Yep.
I adore her. And actors like Shane Jacobson, Stephen Curry, and even relationship experts like Jodie Rogers, Mel Schilling, Rosie Waterland. And then
she's
there's also,
cool.
Oh, yes, definitely. And two directors like Darren Ashton. I have a lot of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Keanu Cleary, who directed Love on the Spectrum. I have a lot of respect for him as well. I also had my parents on there.
Wow. Well, what was that like?
A little weird.
I would love to get my parents on this show.
My mother only came on because that was a fan request. Because
oh.
Everybody loves my mother. Gee. Then I had my best friend Brianna as well.
Yep.
And then I had Hollywood stars like Stephanie Beatriz, Chelsea Peretti, and even one of my heroes, Mark Evan Jackson.
That was incredible. I saw on your Instagram. Yeah.
But I was a little taken aback by how reserved he was.
Really? I think a lot of actors potentially are so different to the characters that they play.
Yes, because I love his work on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Good Place, and Parks and Recreation because his characters are stoic and serious and they have such dry voices. A person I wish my dad was.
Yeah.
Because he's not that. Do you want to know what my idea of an ideal family is?
Tell me.
Having either Captain Holt or Ron Swanson as a father.
Oh.
Angela Martin from The Office as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And having two older sisters like April Ludgate from Parks and Recreation and Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Basically, a father that never smiles, is deathly serious and all that. A mother that's really professional and doesn't smile either.
Why do you want them not to smile?
because I just like the appeal.
Okay.
And older sisters like April Ludgate and Rosa Diaz, two sisters that older sisters that are dark and never smile and enjoy giving me death threats for self-amusement.
So you want to live in a deep, dark family that never smiles and never laughs. That sounds pretty horrible to me.
I just like the appeal.
Yeah. I think that those characters are also, like, good at what they do and the actors especially as well.
Oh, yeah. I especially admire Nick Offerman.
Totally.
He's also a woodworker.
Oh, maybe that's, like, what you could do.
I certainly would love to be his apprentice.
Never know. You could ask. So what about, you know, the podcast? What do you think the podcast has taught you?
It's taught me how to be professional when giving interviews and being mindful of not talking about things that people are not comfortable talking about. Mm-hmm. And it also has given me chances to talk with people that I really find really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. And I guess before we wrap up, I would love to know if there was a dream day in the life of Michael Theo. Maybe you're a famous actor, maybe you have your podcast, I don't know. But if you had a dream day, you could describe it to us, what would the day look like?
That's pretty tough to tell because I would have many ideas, whether it be filming a television show or a film,
mm-hmm.
or going to a tea house in England and having English high tea with a lovely British woman,
mm-hmm.
or going on a holiday somewhere overseas or somewhere outside New South Wales, mm-hmm. or being on traveling behind real engines on a railway.
Wow.
Or being amongst nature with animals as far as the eye can see.
They sound like pretty amazing ways to spend your day.
Yes.
I wanted to quickly ask you, you did a TED Talk.
I did last year, yeah.
You did. And you wrote, you said something that I wrote down that I thought was interesting. You said, I thought that getting a job, falling in love, getting married, buying a house, having kids, getting pets, etc., was success.
I did, yeah.
So can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, I still believe that they're the ideas of success. That's also known as the Australian or American dream. But after Love on the Spectrum and after I was offered an acting role by a director,
mm-hmm.
my view set began to change for a long time afterwards. I now see an actor's life as success. But don't get me wrong, I still wish to have my own place somewhere and be married and have pets and all that. And with kids, I'm open to having children only if she wants them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do have kids, I would only allow two.
Okay.
If she pushes for a third, the answer is no.
So what is your idea of success? How would you define it? Because if it's not what you thought it was, what is it now?
Actually, it's all of those things plus the acting career instead of getting some day job.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And what was doing the TED Talk like? Were you nervous? What was the process like?
I wasn't nervous at all. I was actually pretty confident.
It's amazing. A lot of people would be scared stepping up in front of that many people.
For me, it's pretty easy to do. Mm. I actually enjoy public speaking.
Nice.
And I sometimes make people laugh here and there.
You do.
Unintentionally, though.
Yep.
But I spoke about my idea of success and my life journey as well.
Yeah, I highly recommend people go and watch the TED Talk if they haven't.
It's on YouTube.
It is on YouTube. It's a great, great listen. And it was filmed in Sydney.
It was at Town Hall. In fact, I was actually surprised that I was approached about doing a TED Talk.
Why were you surprised?
Because I'm not that inspirational.
No, but you are an interesting person and you have a lot to share when it comes to, you know, your experience on TV.
Yes. And speaking of which, a lot of people on the spectrum, including their parents, see me as an inspiration and an autism advocate.
How do you feel about that?
I feel honoured to be that. And because I decided to embrace that role, some things I like to see happen is people on the spectrum these days should not get marginalised by their peers and then they would avoid the same crap I went through.
So as an autism advocate, what are some steps that people listening can do to ensure that we're more inclusive and supportive to our friends that have autism?
In terms of friendships, give them a chance. Try and spend time with them. if you don't know how, just take baby steps in doing it. With employment, just give them a chance. Give them a trial. See how they go.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be turn out to be one of the best workers that you ever hired.
It's true.
Same thing happened with me. I was a long-time worker in the one part of this factory that I worked in before Love on the Spectrum. I held down that job for almost 5 years.
Wow.
Until I gave it up a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I did learn something from it.
What did you learn?
You don't leave a steady job for a dream too soon.
Mm.
I've noticed that quite a few people admire me for taking that move.
Mm-hmm.
But European people seem to have this emphasis on making money and saving and all that.
Mm. I've got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think we go after we die?
The spirit realm.
Where's that?
Somewhere in the sky.
In the ether. Do you think we come back? The spirits come back into the earth?
Yes, in different bodies.
Right, so you believe in reincarnation?
Yes.
Okay.
Some people believe in it, but not everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe in it.
So do you think you've been here before?
In previous lives, yes.
Mm.
But the thing is, I have no memories of it.
Fair.
But that's how it's supposed, what's supposed to be done.
Mm.
Having no memories of your previous lives.
Can I ask you, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, because I know you don't enjoy speaking about political topics, which I don't think this really is, but if you're happy to answer, what are your thoughts on religion / faith? Are you religious?
I'm not religious. I'm actually more spiritual than religious.
How would you define the two? Like, how would you separate them?
That's very hard for me to separate, because I know nothing about religion. But those who are religious and choose to believe in it, that's their business, their mm-hmm. lives. But the thing is, I don't see much point in going to a church every Sunday, because listening to someone talk about stuff, it just bores the hell out of you and a waste of a Sunday morning.
Mm.
Well, for me at least.
So how do you see yourself as spiritual? What are the things that you're like, yep, that's why I'm spiritual?
Doing things that connect you within.
Yes.
Like being amongst nature or doing meditation or Tai Chi or yoga.
Mm.
Things that help you connect within.
I love all those things. I think particularly people find that connection in different ways, and it's just particularly helpful to know what that is for you, because it's probably different for everyone. Like some people might love surfing. That helps them feel connected to the earth.
Yes.
Other people love, I don't know, cooking and being in community and family and, you know, giving to others. There's so many different ways you can feel connected to something that's bigger than you.
It depends on what people are interested in and what
totally. What
makes them happy.
Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show, because you are an incredible person. You do amazing work. And I think so many people have seen you on the show, and potentially they might not listen to your podcast, or they want to get to know the person behind the show. So I appreciate you being here and kind of sharing a bit more of your life with us.
It's my pleasure, Georgia. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm honored.
Oh, thank you. I am too. We finish the show the same way. Every single guest is asked the same question.
Mm-hmm.
So that question is, Michael, what is the meaning of life?
The meaning of life should be living it to the fullest, and not living it by constantly doing things that benefit other people. You need to do what benefits you as well. Because one of the worst things about being a kind person is they're liable to be taken advantage of by people who are selfish and will only see you as a means to an end.
Thank you. Please tell everyone where they can find you on social media and your podcast and how they can get in touch with you.
People can find me on Instagram. My username is Mr._A_Plus_Michael. And they can just message me in my DMs.
Mm-hmm.
And with the podcast, they can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can find podcasts.
Great. And what if they want to come on your show, or they have a guest for you, or they should just DM you?
Yeah, they should DM me or even email my producer.
Great.
My producer is named Mandy. She's with DM Podcasts, as am I. Mm-hmm. Her email address is mandy@dm.org.
Great. And what if they want to go on a date with you? How do they get in touch?
They would probably want to message me on Instagram.
Great.
Or even through Messenger if they can find me on there.
Perfect.
But it depends on where they're from as well. Mm. If it's overseas, that's a bit of a tough one.
Mm.
But if it's somewhere like in Sydney, I could definitely do it.
Incredible. Thanks for coming. It's been awesome. I've really enjoyed having you here.
Thank you, Georgia. I really appreciate it. I had a great time talking to you about all this stuff.
I'm so glad.
It's been a blast.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please let me know who you'd love to hear from next, or if you have a story to share, I'd love to get in touch with you. You can connect directly with me on Instagram at lifechatspodcast, one word. And every review and share really does help so much in the early days of building a podcast. So if you've enjoyed this conversation, please share it on social media, or you can snap a pic of where you might be listening and jump onto Apple Podcasts and give us a review. I really do appreciate the support. More than you know. Have a beautiful morning, afternoon, or evening wherever you may be listening in the world. I'm Georgia May, and this is Life Chats.